Hello and welcome to Health in the Real World. I'm Chris Janke, joining Erica Hoke today. A lot of stuff going on right now in Alabama with IVF. And if you are worried that that is going away, or maybe it's coming to my state, et cetera, and we're not going politics today, we're just talking about what are some other options. We have Erica Hoke today. She is the infertile mother of four. She was told by experts that she would not be able to have children, and she did. She has four kids. Erica, thanks for joining us today. Let's get into this.
Yeah. Hey, Chris, thank you so much for having me on. I'm pretty fired up about the topic and being here. So
this is big. I mean, we don't have to go down this rabbit hole too much, but it really came out of left field for me. I was like, wait, they did what? First, give us a little more of your background. I think it's important that people know, you know, just where you came from and how you were able to have four children in the face of, you know, at least you had at least a couple experts telling you that you were not going to have children, right?
Yeah. And even more than that, more than a few reasons why I should have never been able to get pregnant. I had seven different reproductive diagnoses. I was over 35. I had a lot going on. And I was told that I would need donor eggs. I wasn't even a candidate for IVF. It wasn't even an option for me. Like it's becoming, you know, not an option for so many other people for so many other reasons. So we can get into that in a minute. But I had no choice but to figure it out for myself. And clearly, you know, what I did worked, not once, but four times. And so I really want your listeners to understand that they have choices that they might not know that they have.
Yeah, this is huge. One thing that you and I talked about when I said this yesterday is that anytime I've heard of, you know, assistance trying to help people get pregnant, it's always been IVF. So that's mostly commercials on the radio, right? Things like that. I don't even know really what those other modalities would be. So I think it's important to know, because you said that IVF is or should be like a last resort, and there's so many things you can do before that. So what are some of those things that you were able to do that led to that success?
Yeah, I mean, IVF used to be something of last resort, and I definitely want to answer your question. But before I do, I just want to say that there's been a big shift in the industry from you know, it being something of a last resort, a plan B, to really pushing women into IVF, into reproductive medicine, into IUIs before proper testing is done, before, you know, getting to the root cause is even established, right? And so, you know, with this ruling in Alabama, and also just the influx of women who are facing infertility, you know, women are waiting 6 months, a year, you know, they're having a really hard time getting these appointments with their reproductive medicine doctor, and there's a lot that they could be doing in the meantime.
Okay. That makes sense. So yeah. Is this something that doctors, they don't know about? Or, I mean, I guess, you know, everyone has their scope, right? So
yeah,
if they're IVF. So actually, can we back up one more time? What exactly is IVF?
So IVF is in vitro fertilization. So the embryo is created, you know, from the egg and the sperm outside of the woman, and then inserted, right? And so there's, you know, there's varying degrees of that. It's not really my area of expertise to focus on the infertility procedures, but there's, you know, ones where instead of just being put in a petri dish together and allowed to fertilize, they can inject the sperm directly into the egg and things like that. So IUI is intrauterine insemination. Sorry, it took me a minute to think about that acronym because I never say it all the way. But that is when the woman is inseminated with her partner's sperm or donor sperm for that matter. And it kind of bypasses a lot of things going on in her health potentially. So,
Okay. So now the road that you traveled and the modalities and different interventions that you did, was that would you describe that as non-medical? You did things on your own, or what was that road like?
Yeah. So I mentioned that I had seven different diagnoses. So I had, uterine fibroids. I had endometriosis, a pretty severe case of that. I had thyroid, hypothyroid disease, as well as nodules. I had PCOS. I'm not going to go through all of them. But the point of me saying that is I did have surgeries. I did have procedures that showed me what was going on with my health. And I did have to advocate for myself, in particular, like with my fibroids. I had two unsuccessful surgeries, but I was still really symptomatic. I mean, I was almost like not functional. And I just kept pushing my doctors to tell me, like, is there something else that we could try? And there was actually another procedure, turned out that they couldn't find anything. I came out of that third procedure with basically a handful of fibroids that looked like a handful of aquarium grapple. It was crazy. I had so many.
Wow. What do you recommend for somebody who hears your story? Maybe they are worried about IVF going away, or at the very least just wants to try something that's a little bit less, I don't want to say invasive, but a little bit more natural or a little bit less down the road. What would you tell somebody as far as how to explore options, how to educate yourself, how to research this?
Yeah, well, it is invasive and it's very expensive. Reproductive medicine is very expensive. It's very traumatizing because you're spending all this money. And if you're unsuccessful, then, that money's down the drain, or sometimes you are successful and then you miscarry. So it's very traumatizing. So the things that you can focus on prior to are the things that, if you don't do these things that I'm going to tell you, then almost nothing else is going to matter, right? So you're laying either the foundation for your IVF procedure, or if you can't do IVF because of money or religious reasons or not having access, these are the things that you're going to go to.
Okay. Makes sense. Are there one or two things that for you really made a difference? Is it diet related? Was there stress involved, or what were the few things that really made a difference for you personally?
Yeah, for me personally, I would have told you at the time that my diet was pretty good. I think that we all kind of kid ourselves, right? That we eat healthier than we do. But I really had to take a look at my diet, and that's what I teach as well. So diet, not only in terms of nutrition, but in terms of toxins, which is huge. So toxins, both in diet and personal care items, have to be addressed, because if you go and search toxins and fertility, you'll get a .gov website that tells you that these things contain endocrine disrupting chemicals, hormone disrupting chemicals. So it's right there out in the open for everybody to see. I'm just putting it all in one place for people and leading them down the path that they're not having to do all the research that I did. But the personal care products are known hormone disruptors.
Yeah. Wow.
And women put 300 independent chemicals on their body a day, So yeah. We have to address that.
Yeah, definitely. That's the elephant in the room right there. Yeah, that's huge.
We could finish the whole show just with that, but
yeah,
more.
That's huge. All the things that, I remember my question. Was this something that you just researched all on your own, or did you work with like a functional medicine doctor, or what kind of assistance did you have?
I did fertility acupuncture, very consistently, and that helped regulate, my liver, my liver and kidneys, my hormones and things like that. That's what kind of acupuncture does for you. So I did that, but everything else I learned on my own. And, I've learned a ton since then as well, about toxins and their effects. But then the mental health component too, I was also seeing a licensed mental health counselor, because infertility in itself is trauma.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I would imagine it being very stressful, right? It's, we want to have a baby and we can't. And, that's why, it's very high demand as far as people who, they want it this much, it's way up here. And then There's probably a very limited number of medical professionals who do that, which would drive the price up, et cetera, et cetera. I know the medical model, and I know a few people who have been through medical school and they say they talk zero about nutrition, but I'm sure there are at least some medical doctors or, you know, in kind of the system who are talking about this. What kinds of things are they saying, and how are we kind of working together to bridge this gap?
Yeah, I think it's kind of a myth, Chris, that when you go to a reproductive endocrinologist that you're going to get that kind of care. I mean, really, they have a protocol that involves different hormones and different medication to either thicken your lining, improve your ovulation, or, you know, bypass the process through IUI or IVF. You don't really see a lot of reproductive medicine doctors providing. Now, some of them do provide acupuncture in office, so that's a step forward in the right direction, right? But in terms of diet, I see social media posts, I see clients all the time telling me, I just wanted my doctor to tell me what supplements to take. And husbands too, like, what supplement can my husband take to improve his sperm? And you're just not going to get those kind of answers from your reproductive medicine doctor. And it's not their fault. That's not what they do.
Right.
It's just not what they do. So you had mentioned functional medicine, and that is that's definitely a good jumping off point. There's lots of fertility coaches like myself that specialize in, you know, holistic coaching to kind of help you understand and identify, you know, what you can do to affect your fertility.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Makes sense. So a couple comes to you, or let's say a woman comes to you wanting coaching. What does that process look like? Is there an intake? Do you send her for tests, et cetera? I know it's probably depends. It's probably different for everybody, but what are some of the processes in that?
Yeah, I do have a 3-month program, but I want to make sure, you know, that the person coming to me is a good fit for that program. It takes about 3 months for you to improve your egg quality. So while we're going through those 3 months, we are looking at the things, you know, identifying toxins. It's a self-led, you know, video workshop style. And basically just empowering that person, I say toxins, testing, and taking action, right? Mm. So those are the three areas that we want to empower women. And there are many, many overlooked tests. Really, like, so many people come to me and say, I've been tested for everything. You know, they feel like a pincushion, and they're certain 100%. They would probably bet money on it that they've been tested for any, you know, anything and everything. And there's always overlooked testing because, quite frankly, you know, some of these tests are just not in the doctor's best interest. I hate to say it like that, but if they test you and they find out that you have this very common bacterial infection, then they are out a candidate for IVF or IUI or reproductive medicine. So they're not looking for the root cause. And again, this is nothing against doctors. It's just not what they do.
Right. It's on us to educate ourselves. And this is whether it's reproductive medicine or any other type of medicine.
That's right.
We need to know what to look for. So what are some of the most overlooked tests that you've seen?
Yeah, I'm really glad that you asked me, because there's one in particular called ureaplasma. So again, if you research this for yourself, you'll see that what I'm saying is 100% true, that ureaplasma's only symptom can be infertility. And I just was chatting with a woman before I got on here. She has spent 20 years going through doctors, different fertility treatments. And she happened to see an interview that I did on my YouTube channel with a woman who had ureaplasma, and she was able to get tested, and she did in fact have ureaplasma. Wow. Now, I can't stop talking for a second. I know that you want me to pause, but
no, you're good.
Your husband, your partner has to be treated also. And here's the rub, right? You know, so we get somebody tested, they get treated, but they get treated and their partner doesn't, and they continue to have infertility and continue to have fertility problems. The fact is that most doctors don't know how to properly treat ureaplasma.
Is ureaplasma exactly how it sounds? You have plasma in your urine? Is that?
It's not. It's a form of mycoplasma, which is like a type of bacteria vaginosis. But again, it can have no symptoms other than just infertility. It kind of migrates from your urinary tract into your genital tract. And once it's there, it causes basically white blood cells. And so then the sperm have a hard time getting through. So yeah, it's super common. And thank goodness people are talking about it. Yeah. You could read about Erin's whole journey if you want. My books are behind me here. She was a contributor, but she actually had other symptoms. She had urinary tract symptoms. She went from doctor to doctor, 7 different doctors, 9 different failed IUI procedures. She actually had secondary infertility. As soon as she got diagnosed and treated, she didn't just get pregnant once. She got 3 more babies after that. And that was the only thing that changed.
Wow.
That's incredible. Dramatic.
And so you said too, the man also has to get tested or has to go through the same protocol or?
Yeah. So typically the partner is just treated with an antibiotic. If the woman is tested positive for ureaplasma, then the partner takes an antibiotic along the way also. And otherwise they're just passing it back and forth. Not a sexually transmitted disease, just so you know also.
Got it. Okay.
Because people get real nervous about that. So.
Wow. That makes sense. This is actually a good segue. So I just redid my website, healthintherealworld.com. If you guys want to send Erica a voice message, there's a way right on the homepage to send a voicemail. Just press the button, hold it down, and talk. And I would imagine there's a whole list of tests that people need to look for. Do you have
actually on my website. Yeah, 10 commonly overlooked tests that you need to ask your doctor about. Okay. For sure. But yeah, that's one of the top of the list.
10
sure.
tests. Okay. So you just went 10. Into one. We got 9 more. what is your website?
It's just my first and last name. It's Erica with a C and then H-O-K-E. It's pronounced Hoke, like hope. So nice. H-O-K-E. Yeah.
That's awesome.
ErikaHoke.com. Yeah.
And then Erica, talk about your books a little bit and we'll give people a place where they can find you.
Yeah, thanks. So, you know, my story is incredible. It's amazing. But I didn't want people to say, yeah, you know, that was a fluke. That was just a one-off. Like, I know she got pregnant 4 times, you know, whatever people say to themselves. I wanted a collection of stories where people could really see that what I was saying didn't just affect me. It's, you know, the changes that I made, thousands of women are doing this and getting pregnant without reproductive medicine. Or they're implementing the same kind of changes and now they're getting success, right? So the books are the Infertility Success Series. It's wherever books are sold, but you know, Amazon, Barnes and Noble, Target, that sort of thing, and internationally as well. But these women's stories are, you know, similar to mine, similar to Erin's that I mentioned. Another woman, you know, lost her ability to use her own eggs because of a missed test. So this happens over and over again. And I just want women to feel empowered and have a voice in their own medical journey and take charge of their fertility, because no one cares about it as much as you do, you know, and that's the bottom line. And, and so that's why I wrote the book. So it's not just a memoir. It's not just our story. We went back, each author put tips throughout the chapter of like, hey, man, I wish you would know this right here. I wish I would have known this. Stop here. Get this test. Red flag, flashing lights, you know, like this is really where my journey could have ended if I had known what I knew when I got to the end of it, right?
Wow. Yeah, that's huge. I think that's the theme of the show is that it's, again, we're not villainizing anybody. Those people doing IVF, the doctors, they're doing great work. They're helping dreams come true. It's really more of, you know each professional's purpose, right? You're not going to try to hammer a nail into the wall with a wrench. You need to use the right tools. And this is yet another tool in the toolbox. Erica, any final thoughts closing out? How would you summarize this episode and the call to action?
I would say whether you're doing IVF, whether you can't do IVF for whatever reason, feel empowered that your body is telling you, something. You need to pay attention to your symptoms. You know, as women, I feel like a lot of times we're just pain, discomfort, things like that are normalized. And so all of that means something. So just get curious about what's actually going on with your body and don't accept, a lesser standard of quality of life because a doctor keeps telling you that all your tests are normal or that you're in normal range or they can't help you. If I had listened to my doctors and, you know, they told me that they couldn't help me, my four children would not be here today. And I really understand how difficult the infertility journey is, but you are the one that has to unravel your mystery or find somebody to help you unravel that and, get the help that you need so you can make your dreams come true.
Wow. Yeah. So true. I mean, that's so powerful. And somebody who's watching this, listening to this, you know, now or down the line, if you can help even just one person, as they say, right, one mother to try to figure this out, then it's all worth it. So again, Erica Hoke, the infertile mother of four, fertility coach, author, speaker. Erica, thank you so much for joining us today on Health in the Real World.
Thank you so much, Chris. I enjoyed it.